It is the week after the 2022 National Championship game. This is the We Hate Your Team podcast. I'm Kelly Ford, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Zach King. Kinger, it's episode 23 of the 2022 season. We just saw Georgia and TCU play for the National Championship game. College football season's over, man. How we feel?
Yeah, crazy. 23, you say it like that, it's just kind of crazy to put in perspective how many episodes we've done this year and how fast everything went. You said it. College football season is over. Georgia are the national champions once again. A little bit unfortunate, I think, for everybody how the game turned out. I think everybody probably would have liked to see a little bit of a closer battle, but doesn't take away anything that in what Georgia was able to accomplish this year, or TCU, for that matter, as well. It was still a great college football playoff, still a fun national championship game, especially if you're a Georgia fan. But we did it. We made it to the end. Now it's already looking ahead to next year, right, Kelly?
Oh, yeah, Zach. I've already begun working on the 2023 preseason ratings. I've gotten to a decent spot with the recruiting updates and with the most recent 4 years of K-Ford ratings as I finalize the 2022 ratings here. The majority of my time is going to be spent on returning production, and that's always the case, and that is the largest input that goes into my preseason ratings. So I have plenty of work to do over the summer, tweaks here or there, maybe just back testing, looking at different things. But before we get to all of that, King, I do think we do need to just take a little bit of time. You talked about it. Georgia's the national champions. It's the first repeat champions we've had in a decade since Alabama did it when Kirby Smart was the defensive coordinator for Nick Saban and the Crimson Tide. So I think we just need to talk a little bit about the game, King. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you watched the game, you saw what it was. The final score was 65-7, and I regret to inform TCU fans, it really was that bad. I mean, it could have been even worse if you want to make the case for Georgia not executing on a play or two. TCU, King, just didn't have it in this game. I want to ask you, King, one, general thoughts on the game, and I'll give mine as well. But two, at what point did you say game over? Because I remember what point it was for me, and I was texting some people during the game, and they're like, one of them had the nerve to ask, are you watching this? It's like, yeah, dude, of course I'm watching this. Yes, what are you talking about? Am I watching it? Obviously. But we started to go back and forth, and he's saying it's over. Someone else texts me, it's over. I wasn't ready to call it just yet. But overall thoughts, King, hit me with those. And then at what point did you say this game's over? Like, TCU has 0% chance to win.
So to start, I would say that, as I talked about on the podcast last week and approaching the game this week, I was pretty high on TCU. I bet TCU plus 13. I had that feeling that TCU was kind of the team of destiny, and I thought their ability to create on the offensive side of the ball and produce was something that I thought was going to give Georgia's defense fits. Now, I didn't think they were Ohio State good on the offensive side, but I thought they had enough. I thought they had enough from Max Duggan in the ground game. They're so dynamic in what they can do. They're so well-balanced. TCU, incredibly balanced team. I thought they were going to be able to score some points with Georgia. But when Kirby Smart, right before the game off, I think they had Melissa or Pam Saunders and somebody else interviewing Kirby Smart and Sonny Dykes right before the game. And when they said they asked Kirby what his team needed to do to win tonight, and his response was just aggression, nothing else. That's all that needed to be said. You could tell the seriousness in his voice. And he said, nope, we're going to be aggressive. That's what we taught the kids. This is what we expect tonight. I had a feeling in my stomach that it was going to go very badly for TCU. Now, I had a text message from 90 seconds into that game. I'm not even kidding. After the first three and out, I had text messages from multiple people on my phone saying that this game was over already. Now, me being the optimist that I am,
that's ridiculous, King. For anyone that texted you after the first three and out to say the game is over, that is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but they were right. And my response was, we're literally 90 seconds into this game. Let's see what happened. And I'm going to tell you when I think I knew that TCU had no chance. And it was probably earlier than most people. It was actually after Quentin Johnson got the defensive holding call called on him on the second drive of the game. TCU was up 7-0. I don't think that was a hold at all. I think Quentin Johnson, quite frankly, just stumbled over himself and fell down. I thought it was a poor call on Georgia. And then the very next play, I think it was TCU, I forget which wide receiver it was, he fumbled the ball in Georgia, and Georgia recovered in TCU's territory. Now, they did hold him to a field goal, but at that moment, to me, in my head, I was like, all right, this is going to get ugly quickly. And they tweeted it. And that's exactly what it did. Georgia just outmatched TCU. They were more physical than them. They were faster than them. They were stronger than them. Stetson Bennett is a proven winner. And I loved his they asked him in the postgame interview again, you know, how does he describe tonight? And his response was, is just brutal execution, stone cold execution. And that's exactly what Georgia did. They were fired up. They were hyped up. They knew they had more talent than TCU on the field, and they were ready to play. They played with all their hearts. They wanted to win that game. They wanted to showcase, show everybody that they were the best team in the country, especially after slipping up, or not slipping up, but making a close game versus Ohio State, rightfully so. And you could just tell that the dogs were coming out. The dogs were going to be unleashed. They weren't going to hold them back. And it was just a complete rout. And I feel bad for TCU to a certain extent. I'm going to be honest with you. After being down as much as I did, I live bet Georgia in the third minus 44.5 points. Ridiculous. I didn't think I'd be ever betting minus 44.5 in a college football game, but I made my money back and I lost.
Let alone a national championship game.
Let alone a national championship. So I did make my money back from what I bet on TCU. So that at least made me feel a little bit better. But at the end, I mean, even the backups, I think Georgia's twos would have beat TCU by 21, 28 points, even if they sat their entire starting, all their starters. It was just a beatdown. And there's nothing – I don't want to – bash on TCU, because you got some people today saying it was a pathetic performance. And okay, yes, on the field it was rough. They obviously didn't play the way that they wanted to, and it wasn't competitive. A lot of people the arguments are going to be made that another team, you know, would have gave Georgia a better game. Alabama specifically is the one that's been thrown up a lot, but TCU still needs to be proud of themselves. They had a great season. No one expected them to be there. Yeah, they got boat raced by Georgia, but I think just about every other team in the country would have been boat raced by Georgia too in that same situation. They have a lot to hold their heads on. And I think Sonny Dykes said some great things after the game. It didn't go their way. Georgia was clearly the better team. And it just, unfortunately, they overtook Purdue. They now have the worst loss in bowl history, deficit wise. So I can hang my head on that at least. But I do feel for TCU. But at the end of the day, great season from them. This program's only going to continue to go upwards. I think the trajectory there, I think they got a good one at Sonny Dykes. The TCU name, the brand is stronger than ever now. They've kind of gotten over that hump with the Gary Patterson years there, and they're in a good position going forward. Just didn't work out for them this time around.
And we'll talk more about the positions we think these two programs, King, as well as the two semifinal losers, Michigan and Ohio State. We'll talk about the future of those programs a little later on in the episode. I'm not even going to entertain the idea and the notion that, you know, TCU didn't deserve to be there or some other team would have given Georgia a better game. Like, I'm past all that. That's nonsense. I have no time for it. TCU deserved to be in the playoff. Then they went out and beat Michigan, an undefeated Big Ten champion who everybody said deserved to be in the playoff. They earned their chance to play Georgia. And partly Georgia just being the best team in the country, which we've seen throughout most of this season. I mean, in my power ratings, I started the year number three, quickly jumped to number one, and remained there for the second half of the season, basically, and partly because TCU didn't really show up for that game. I mean, if we play that game, King, 10 times, I think Georgia probably wins it. I mean, I gave Georgia an 81% chance to win coming into the game. So my numbers would say Georgia wins that game 8 out of 10 times. But I don't think, King, in the other 9 iterations of that game out of the 10, none of them have a final score with a 50-plus point margin of victory. Like, everything went right for Georgia. Credit to them, because they had a great game plan. They executed. They put TCU in a bad spot right from the jump, and they kept them in a bad spot the whole time. But if we play that game 10 times, it's never that ugly again for TCU. I firmly believe that. That's not how it works. We play the game one time. That's the way it went. That's the way it'll be remembered. So I get all that. King, I'm just going to read to you the drive results for TCU, and then I'll do it for Georgia. The drive results, this is the entire game for TCU. First possession to final possession. Punt, fumble, touchdown, punt, interception, interception, end of the first half. Punt, punt, turnover on downs, punt. That is a summary of TCU's drives in that game. Turn it around to Georgia, and here's their summary. Touchdown, field goal, touchdown, 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 second half, punt, touchdown, 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 end of game. Like, when you think about it like that, when you say
pretty flawless, when you pretty flawless from the dog,
when you say it out loud and you think about it like that, there is no other way to describe this game than complete domination by Georgia. And again, not taking anything away from TCU and the season they had, they far and away exceeded my expectations. They exceeded everybody's expectations. They were my number one overachiever this year in terms of wins over expected from preseason expectations. But it was not a good, there's no other way to say it. There was not a good game for them. For me, King, I asked you when you thought the game was over, when you knew the game was over, and you're actually saying when the score was 7-0 Georgia and they got the ball back. Which, ironically, King, I just read you the drive summaries, the drive outcomes for the first half. The only first half drive for Georgia
that
didn't end up in a touchdown was that one. It's also the only one that started in TCU territory. So, like, at that point, I took that, hey, you know, Georgia just got the turnover, which, coming into the game, I said there's two things, and others said it too, there's two things TCU needs to do to win this game. They need to hit explosive plays, like multiple explosive plays, half a dozen or more explosive plays, which is really hard to do, but they're a very explosive offense. So can they do that? Kendre Miller not playing obviously didn't help in that regard. And they have to win the turnover battle. Like, they can't turn the ball over, and they need to turn over Georgia two, maybe even three times to have a chance to win this game. Well, they didn't do really either of those things, King. But I did think when they got the stop there, because I'm getting to when I knew the game was over or when I thought it was over, they got the stop after Georgia got the ball in their territory. I said, okay, 10-0. They just got punched in the mouth. They just survived a turnover in their own territory. Only gave up three. Here we go. And then they get a touchdown on their next drive. And I'm like, all right, it's game on. They're in it now. This is TCU. They're a team of destiny this year. We're going to get us a good game. Georgia gets the ball, goes score a touchdown. TCU punts. Georgia scores another touchdown. All of a sudden, it's 24-7. This is when the texts really start coming in on my end. People saying, hey, Kelly, it's over. Like, let's turn it off. What are we doing? Are you watching? And, of course, I watched to the very end. I still wasn't ready to call the game. I mean, there was so much time left in this game. We had more than a half to play. It was 24-7. TCU was getting the ball. Then they throw a pick. And I'm like, all right, it's not good, but I'm still not calling it. Georgia proceeds to go on an 11-play, 66-yard touchdown drive. It's 31-7. I'm like, this game is hanging by a thread. Like, it is very close. I still haven't called it, King. And then they throw another pick. And at that point, it was 31-7. It was late in the second quarter. Georgia had the ball. And I said, this game is over. And then Georgia proceeds to score another touchdown there before the half ends. And that was it. So I called it before half. I think I held out hope longer than almost anybody except for maybe TCU fans who were just thinking, can we have the greatest turnaround of all time here in this game?
I'll say when TCU made that first stop in the second half, when Georgia had a punt three and out, my head was starting to go to, is there a chance that TCU is going to find a way to cover these 13 points? That lasted for about 90 seconds in total too, because
TCU went three and out.
Went three and out. Exactly. So that was very short lived as well, but I held off some hope as well. I knew George was going to win the game, but when they got that start, I was still from the gambling perspective. I was like, new half, even Saban at half was like talking about how he was hoping that TCU would find some rhythm. Didn't think it would be that bad, but no, Georgia was that good. And they were playing at 100% intensity the entire game. I wanted to ask you, Kelly, actually, I had two thoughts, but what did you think of Kirby kind of doing the curtain call for his guys early in that fourth quarter? Do you think that was disrespectful at all? Do you think it was the right thing to do? How would you have approached it? What were your thoughts on that?
So my thoughts, and I want to get yours too, King, since you asked the question. My thoughts were I started watching the game, and we have a spare bedroom or an extra bedroom that we have recently made into like a movie theater. Basically, we have a projector that we used to use, or that we use in the summer for outside movies with a big screen and all that, and the kids love it. Well, the kids love the indoor movie theater too, so we've made it a movie theater. It's a 126-inch screen, King. Got a couch in there, some bean bags, sitting table, all that stuff. I started watching the game in there because I'm like, this is gonna be cool. We're gonna watch this game on the big screen. Fletcher's in, my son's in there with some toys and stuff. Our daughter's in there with some toys. She's getting ready to go to bed. I didn't even make it to halftime in the movie theater. We moved our way down to the basement because Fletcher started wanting to watch some things on TV. So I said, okay, buddy, we'll go downstairs. I put the game on, and then I put on one of the other TVs in the 5-TV setup we have in the basement, Bluey on TV for him. King, after halftime, I turned off the sound on the game, and I turned on the sound for Bluey for my son. So I missed commentary. I missed any sort of context of what was all I was seeing. I was seeing the game, not hearing the game. I was kind of staying off social media for the most part, so I wasn't keeping up with much of that. So I don't know what the commentator said. I don't know how the fans reacted. I don't know any of that. To me, I have zero problem with Kirby Smart pulling his guys. I mean, Stetson getting his own and then the rest of his guys. I have no problem with them getting the curtain call king. The game was well over at that point. It had been over for a long time, especially for like Stetson and other players who won't be coming back to the team. It was a chance for them to be recognized on the biggest stage by their fans in a celebratory moment. King, I am really big on if you don't like it, stop me. Like, running up the score, to me, this is Division I college football. You missed me with, oh, they ran up the score. Like, missed me with that. Especially on the national championship stage. If you don't want me doing something, stop me from doing it. And I don't think there was any disrespect. I'm curious to hear your thoughts there. TCU should have expected that to be coming. If they wouldn't have been getting blown out in the game, we wouldn't have had that. Like, right? Like, they would have had to keep playing their starters till the very end if it was a close game and all that. So I have no problem with it. Again, I don't have any context of what the commentator said or what social media was saying or how they reacted in the stands. I was just watching it, and again, my eyes were drifting to bluey every now and then because the game was starting to, it really got out of hand. So what about you, though? I assume since you asked the question, you might have a problem.
No, I don't. I think I've got similar thoughts to you, but it is something that I've thought about a considerable amount here over these last 24 hours, because I agree with your statement that when it comes to blowouts, it comes to doing things on the field where it's, you know, showboating or embarrassing, stop me, right? I got no problems with team running up the score. This is college football. It's a competitive environment. None of that bothers me. Now, and I also think that the Georgia fans the Georgia players deserve to have their moment in the spotlight. These guys then aren't going to play for the University of Georgia anymore, back-to-back national champions that have brought glory back to the University of Georgia. I got no issue with that, and I think they deserve to have that moment. The way to get them to do that, to allow that to happen, it's tough for me because I don't think there's a good way to do it. It was kind of annoying to me, especially because I was in the camp where I wanted this game to be over. It was no longer interesting. I mean, it was no longer interesting or appealing to me. I was ready for the game to be over, and I felt like it delayed it a little bit more. I would have felt like, you know, Kirby, let's just keep this game moving. There's 9-10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. You know, you're going to win this game. Let's start running the ball. Let's move this clock. Let's not hold this up any longer for the theatrics. Now, it was a special moment for those players, and I got no issue with it. But I don't know if I would have done it that early. Or if I would have gone about it that way. I don't know if there would have been another moment to get those guys on the field and allow the players and the fans to embrace him and cheer for him, whether it be a timeout or anything like that, just send the guys out there for a quick second, you know, on the field to wave to everybody. But he did it both offense and defense, which I think was the fair thing to do. So ultimately, at the end of the day, I don't have a problem with it. I was a little bit upset it slowed the game down, but what those guys accomplished and in which the manner they dominated this football game, I think it was right that they did have their moment, and I don't really have an issue with Kirby doing it either. It would have never happened, like you said, had TCU kept the game close. So that's the Trump argument, in my opinion. That's really what counters all. But it was interesting because I did see some people on Twitter with some mixed commentary on it, and ultimately I think I'm all right with it as well. I don't know if there's a right way to handle that without it coming off as, you know, annoying or maybe disrespectful or maybe some showboating to the other team. I don't think there's a way to do it. I don't think Kirby meant that in any way like that, but I just think it comes off still to some of those players, to the other organization, that it's a little bit much. Like, come on, let's keep this moving along.
And I would just quickly to respond to your thoughts and comments there. You're saying, I don't know if I would have done it that early. Like, King, he wanted to get the backups in the game. Like,
I know. You don't want to. That's the argument. That's a fair argument.
Yeah, you don't want to wait any longer to do it. I mean, if anything, yeah. I could have seen him doing it earlier. But if you pull your starters and you do a curtain call and all that in like the third quarter, now it's like, yikes. I mean, I'm not saying it's disrespectful, but like, yikes, guys. Like, we got to the point where, and he could have done it. Like, the game was not. They were not going to lose the game, even if they played. Like you said, King, at the beginning, you said, I think their second, like Georgia's second team, might have beat TCU's first team in this game by multiple scores, maybe, depending, like, based on how what we saw and how that went. I think he pulled them for early fourth quarter. I think that's probably right. get the backups in to get their time. I don't think you want to wait any longer because there's no point in having your ones out there anymore. Like, let's Kirby wants to get those twos some experience in a national championship game, because many of those twos are going to be ones next year, and they're going to be gunning for a three-peat, and the way their schedule sets up, they might have a good chance. We'll talk much more about that in future episodes, I'm sure, but he wants to get them some experience on the big stage. And also, you said, King, you wanted the game to speed up, hurry up. I don't think you're alone in that. I think lots of people wanted to. I didn't mind it dragging out because I know that for the next 7.5 months, we don't have any college football to watch. So I was trying to soak in as much as I could in what was a blowout game, the final moments of the 2022 season, just because I know we're going to miss it here for the next 228 days, I think it is now. So also for Kirby, he wanted that to go as long as it could because he has the attention of everybody in the college football world. The fans, the current players, opposing coaches, recruits, players on other teams that could end up in the transfer portal. He has the attention of every single person who's invested in college football, and he wants that to last as long as it can, and he wants Georgia to look as good as they can so that everybody watching knows, hey, Georgia, we're back-to-back national champs. No one has touched us in 2 years with the exception of Alabama in the SEC championship game in the 2021 season. Like, we are now the kings of this sport.
That was my next question, Kelly. Is Georgia the new face of college football? Are they the new top dogs in the SEC?
So I think that's a really good question. That's going to segue us, King, into let's talk about the future of these four programs in particular that made the CFP. Let's start with Georgia. And what I will say, King, is for the last 2 years, you can't dispute they've been the best team. They finished the year, they didn't start either year as number one in my power ratings, but they finished both years as number one in the power ratings. They, of course, won two national championships. They won one SEC championship. They are the most accomplished team in college football in the last 2 years, and it is not close. They've won two titles. Everybody else that's playing FBS college football has won zero. So, yes, in terms of merit, in terms of accomplishment, Georgia is the number one team in college football. They are the top dogs. They will, King, I'm fairly certain, start next year as the AP preseason number one team in the polls. Like, I can't imagine they'd put either Alabama and Ohio State or the other two. Michigan, if you want to throw Michigan in there as another team that's very accomplished. Michigan's the only team out of that group that returns their starting quarterback next year. So,
did you see Vegas odds for who the four favorites are for Michigan's not in there.
No, they got Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, and Clemson, right? Was that
USC?
Oh, USC's number four? Interesting. Mm-hmm. And of course, Caleb Williams coming back is obviously playing a large part into that. So, King, I'll answer your question by saying, yes, they are the kings of college football. Yes, they are on top of the mountain, and they got back to the top again. I told you I think the AP is going to have number one. King, I am 98% sure right now Georgia's not going to be my number one team in the preseason power ratings. It's going to be Alabama again. I'm looking. So there's three inputs that I have to the preseason numbers, primary inputs that take up the most weight. One is returning production. I talked about it earlier. I have not even started to do returning production calculations. I really don't do that until February, I mean, if I'm being honest, because transfer portal, players moving around everywhere, declaring for the draft, all that stuff. So I haven't gotten into that yet. But the other two main components is the weighted four-year recruiting rankings, or ratings, I should say, for every FBS program. And those are still subject to change as things come into place for the 2023 class, and we get final signatures on the dotted line, we get some flips, whatever it is, for uncommitted prospects, because there still are a few at this point. Not many, but there's a few. And then the weighted four-year average K-Ford ratings, so from the last 4 years, and I just updated the 2022 numbers in advance of this episode so I could talk about this a little bit. In both of those components, King, Alabama's the number one team. Now, Georgia's in the top three in both, and Ohio State joins them in the top three in both. Ohio State's number two in the rated ratings, K-Ford ratings. Georgia's number two in the four-year recruiting ratings, and then each of them are three in the other of those. But Alabama's number one in both. So I have to do the returning production. It's the largest input. I understand that. And it's possible that Georgia could be number one. They will be in my top three. I think they'll probably be number two, if I had to guess right now. But I'll know more, of course, as we work our way through the summer. But no, King. Like, they are they're the, in my opinion, they're the Vegas favorite to win the championship next year because they are the two-time defending champions. So the public is viewing that and valuing.
And their schedule is a complete joke next year.
The public is valuing that very heavily. And what you just said, that was my second point here, their schedule sets up incredibly well for them next year. They are in the SEC East. I can't remember off the top of my head, King, who their crossover games are. Their most difficult game on the schedule is going to be, in my opinion, a trip to Knoxville in the second to last week of the regular season. The SEC East could be on the line that week. I mean, if Georgia's undefeated and Tennessee only has one conference loss even, the East is on the line because Tennessee would then hold that head-to-head tiebreaker. So Tennessee will be motivated. Tennessee's going to be a good team. I'm looking at these numbers right here on the screens in front of me. They are 15th in the four-year recruiting ratings. They are 19th in the four-year K-Ford rating average. So Tennessee's going to be a good team. They started this past year number 17. They will start higher than that this year. I'm fairly certain in saying that. And they jumped very quickly up into the top seven and stayed there. So that'll be a good test. But Georgia's the favorite, in my opinion, not because Vegas thinks they're going to be the best team. I don't think Vegas does. I mean, there's a clear-cut top tier here, and I think they're in that, obviously. I think if you put Vegas, you know, hold their feet to the fire, the odds makers would say Alabama's projecting to be the best team next year. That's what I think. That's what my numbers think. But King, what about you? Same question back at you.
I mean, I think the tables have turned a little bit in Georgia's favor. And I think nationally, they're in the best position of anybody else in the country right now. And it's mainly just because they compete year in and year out. They are a top two, top three recruiting school. They've gotten over the hump. The culture that Kirby Smart has instilled at Georgia, a lot of it came from the University of Alabama, but you can tell this is a place where a lot of these high-level, top-level recruits are going to continue to commit to Georgia just like they do Alabama. As long as Saban's there, Georgia's going to be there as well. And I think, yes, Georgia didn't have the opportunity to face Alabama this year, but beating them in the national championship game last year, overcoming that SEC championship loss, and then the run that they went on this season – They're the premier program of college football right now. And I know a lot of Bama fans would definitely laugh at that. And that is by no means a shot. Alabama's going to be right back at the top next year. And you talk about David Pollack saying that he thought Georgia was the premier program. They've passed up right in front of Saban on the college football or on the college game day set this year, stating that Georgia has passed Alabama. They're the premier program. I think that's going to light a little bit of a fire under Saban. But I think at the moment, even though Alabama technically has the better recruiting class next year, all of these freshmen aren't going to come in and make an immediate impact. There's still question marks at quarterback next year for both those schools, but Georgia's the two-time reigning national champion. They've got all the momentum right now, and they are one, Bama's two, in the premier college football programs, in my opinion, right now in the country.
Are you worried, King, at all about hunger and motivation and complacency beginning to seep into that program now that you are two-time national champions? You've only lost one game in 2 years. Are you worried about complacency? Because we have seen that, King, during Alabama's dynasty. We saw it from time to time, especially early, even when they're winning two national championships in a row, three out of four, whatever it is. Like, are you worried about that at all with Georgia right now?
I don't. And there was, a tidbit in the post game last night that Kirby Smart was walking off the field and there were a bunch of Georgia fans barking like dogs and cheering and hollering at him as he walked off the field. And he looked up and he had his fingers in the air. He said, 1, 2, and then he pointed up that third finger and pointed to it. Georgia's coming back next year feisty. They're going for that three-peat. They want to be the second team, only the second team ever in college football history to win three straight national championships. There's going to be a lot of roster turnover with them again. We'll see how these young guys step up, but I still think they're going to be as hungry as ever. I really do, and I think these young guys that got a taste to play in this championship game, I think that fuels them even more. For them to go out there and have some success, be able to get some PT, when most of those guys probably never in a million years thought that they would see see the field at all in a national championship game. I just think this is all built up. I think what Kirby's got there going is special right now. And with that Georgia schedule, well, dog on the SEC schedule, you're really going to give me UT Martin, UAB, and Ball State in a non-conference and then act like we're the big, bad, tough SEC to go play the SEC East schedule again to talk about that? Look, we know the SEC's top dog. I'm willing to admit that. But come on. Like that's
it's not great. There's no Oregon right on this year's non-conference schedule, which honestly, King, we're not talking about it a whole lot because everyone's just expecting that Georgia's going to be favored by 2+ touchdowns in every game that they play next year, which they probably will be. Maybe the Tennessee game's a shorter line than 2 touchdowns, but they'll be favored by, you know, it's on the road, but they'll be
double digits.
They'll be favored by 10 points. Yeah, I'd say so. And again, things can change, but Georgia is a team, like people this year talked about, hey, Michigan, if they lose that game to Ohio State at the end of the year, they might be on the outside looking in because the non-conference schedule wasn't very good. Well, Georgia might be a team next year, King, that if they stub their toes somewhere in the SEC schedule, and again, I get it, it's going to be really hard, optically, politically, whatever, to leave out a, call it 11-1 Georgia team who didn't make the SEC championship, who's 2-time defending national champions because you're saying they have a weak non-conference schedule. Like, who knows what my numbers would say at that point? I get that's a hard it's a hard stance to take. Hopefully, if it's the right one, the committee would do that. But if you when you don't challenge yourself in the non-conference, and then you play a conference schedule that, yes, it's SEC, but we just agreed the East is clearly the easier of the two divisions. It has been for a very long time, if not always. And they're not getting a ton of heavy hitters out of the West in their crossover games. You could open the door for a conversation about your merit if you don't finish the regular season undefeated because you haven't challenged yourself in the non-conference. So, again, these are all ifs, ands, or buts, hypotheticals. Georgia's going to be big favorites, but we see big favorites lose all the time in college football. So it's worth saying now because if and when it happens, people might start to freak out and lose their minds and say, what about this? Let's compare their resume there. But, yeah, King, I think the complacency thing is real. Now, Kirby was there. He was at Alabama during the 2010 season. He was at Alabama during the 2013 season. Actually, 2013, that was the kick six year. It's not like they were complacent. It's they got beat on the kick six, and that's what knocked them out of the SEC championship game and out of ultimately the playoff conversation. But Kirby went through these things at Alabama, having major success, winning national championships. He saw pitfalls to be aware of, and he kind of knows what to look out for. So I'm not suggesting that Georgia's going to be complacent or going to have that type of attitude seep into the program, entitlement, if you will, by players who haven't won anything. These freshmen coming in, you know, kids that were freshmen this year that maybe didn't play a lot are going to have big roles as sophomores. But it's just something to keep an eye on because we haven't seen this level of success on the national championship stage in consecutive years, in 10 years, since Alabama did it, as we talked about. And King, you said they're going for their first three-peat. Correct me if I'm wrong, Minnesota in 1934, 5, and 6? Is that who you're talking about?
Okay, so there's two then. I'm talking about Army, I think it was 1947, 1948, 1949.
Okay, and again, we're talking the 30s, we're talking the 40s, back when there were split championships, there were people claiming because, hey, we were number one in this poll. Like, there's all sorts of claimed titles out there. We haven't seen a three-peat in a very long time is the point. And George, certainly not since the FBS-FCS split in the late 70s or we got to the BCS era in 1998.
You're right. Minnesota did have the 30s and it was Army in the 40s.
Okay, so there we go. There's a couple. Both of those probably, I don't have it on top of my head, both of those have probably, other schools have claimed at least a share of a title in at least one of those years. That Georgia's the 2-time undisputed, and they're going for 3 next year, and if they win it in the final year of a 4-team playoff, they will be that team and go down as one of the greatest 3-year stints in college football history, if not the greatest. So to do that in the college football playoff era, I think is incredibly impressive and very challenging. So, King, we both know that Georgia is in a great spot moving forward. We think that they're going to be back next year. We don't have to make picks for playoff and all that, but they are heavily favored to make the playoff. They are the Vegas odds-on favorite to win the national championship already in 2023. Let's talk about TCU quickly, King. What do you think about TCU and their outlook 2023? But beyond.
Yeah, I think they're in a good spot. And they talked about it on the broadcast. Herb Street said last night, second half, I think TCU is in a position to potentially be the new face, the new premier program in the Big 12. I think they did hit a home run with Sonny Dykes. I don't think there can be any argument made that the coaching job that he's done this year was pretty spectacular. And he's got this program in a great place as well. It's starting to become a more popular. It's always been a good strong destination for athletes to go play football. You know, TCU is a good school. It's small, private, so maybe doesn't quite have all of the big appeal and the big feel that some of these other universities have, although the Big 12 is losing their main primary ones with Oklahoma and Texas. But I think they're going to continue to do well in the recruiting trail. I think there's still some improvements to be made. Our buddy Parker was talking about how they need to start focusing a little bit more on the offensive line and maybe some of these the trenches a little bit more. But what Sonny's doing, I think TCU is going to be successful in the future. I don't know that we're going to get another run like this in the immediate future with them. But again, they're attracting some big names from the transfer portal. And I think they're going to continue to grow. I think they're going to continue to be a successful program year in and year out.
So TCU for me, King, it's interesting to hear you say you think they might be, you know, the face or the big brand in the new look Big 12. I am not ready to go that far yet. And again, I'm using my numbers here to kind of look at trends and projections and trajectories. TCU is absolutely on the right trajectory. Like they're pointed straight up as a program. You can't be playing a national championship one year and say anything other than that in the immediate days afterwards, regardless of how the actual game went. TCU started this year number 44 in my power ratings. They finished the year number 13. They did fall four spots based on the performance against Georgia, which that's a pretty hefty fall. I mean, the teams are bunched up there, King, but that's a pretty big fall. I mean, that goes to show you how badly they got beaten in that game. I mean, far worse than they were expected to. My projected line was 12.5 points right around Vegas's. If we're looking at future Big 12 teams in my – well, let me tell you first. TCU comes in at number 28, funny enough, on both the weighted four-year recruiting ratings and weighted four-year K-Ford ratings. So they're number 28 in both of those. So this is going to be they were 44 last year. This is going to be a top 30-ish team for me in the preseason power ratings. But if we're looking at the Big 12 programs that are ahead of them, King, on these two lists, we'll talk about future Big 12 programs. So no Texas and Oklahoma here. The weighted four-year K-Ford ratings, ahead of TCU, I have Cincinnati, Iowa State, Oklahoma State.
You have Scott Satterfield, Cincinnati Bearcats ahead of TCU.
So, King, remember what these are. These are the weighted four-year K-Ford rating averages. So we're looking at the last four, including 2022. We're looking at the seasons 2022, 2021, 2020, which, again, some asterisks by that. Especially when you consider how great of a year Cincinnati had in 2020, right? And then 2019. And it's the value, the weighting associated with each of those years, Kings, decreases the farther back we go. So 2022 is getting the most weight, then 2021, then 2020, then 2019. So 2019 is not making up a large portion of these ratings, but they are still incorporated. In a year's time, 2019 will fall off, and it will be replaced by the 2023 data, right? So remember what these are. I'm not suggesting that they will be more highly rated than TCU in the power ratings in the preseason next year. This is one of the inputs, and this is what it is. So I have Cincinnati, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, Baylor, and Kansas State all ahead of TCU. Other teams in my top 40 from the Big 12, as I look through here, UCF and BYU. And so that rounds out the top 40 future Big 12 programs that I have there. So that's the K-Ford ratings. Now let's look at the weighted four-year recruiting ratings. Again, looking at the same set of teams. Ahead of TCU, we have, as I'm going down the list here, wow, nobody. The highest ranked K-Ford weighted four-year recruiting rating team that's going to be input into my power ratings once you remove Texas and Oklahoma for the Big 12. I just double-checked it again, King. TCU is number one on that list at number 28.
There's a little shock in your voice, to be honest.
There's a lot of shock in my voice, King. I just updated these. I'm just looking at them here right before the show for the first time. I did not expect the Big 12. Again, Texas and Oklahoma still Big 12 members. They are both currently in the top 10 here. Texas number 5, four-year average recruiting ratings, and then Oklahoma number 9. I did not expect the future Big 12 to not have any teams higher than TCU at 28. Other programs in the top 40 include Baylor at 33, West Virginia at 34, Texas Tech at 37, and Oklahoma State at 40. So I am very surprised by that. TCU, in terms of recruiting, leading the Big 12. So that makes me feel a little bit better about what you said, and maybe they could be the future of that program. I'm still just a little bit in shock at that. So, King, I think that the future's absolutely bright. TCU, number 28 in both of these. That is up year over year. So, again, updated this year to include the most recent 4 years. If I go back to what were these rankings a year ago, TCU's up 7 spots in the recruiting rating. So they were 35 at this time last year in those. And they're up 12 spots in the K-Ford ratings average. So because they had such a great year this year and their rating was so high, they're finishing the year with an 89.4, which is a phenomenal rating. It's number 13 in the country, right? They're up 12 spots. They were number 40 last year. They are now number 28. So they're trending in the right direction. They have amazing momentum right now. They're going to be able to capitalize on that in the 2024 recruiting cycle, I'm sure, because you typically see the bump in recruiting come a year after.
Well, they just got 3 Bama transfers themselves this year, too. Jojo Earl, Trey Sanders, and the tackle, too. I got to think of his name off the top of my head. But they're a popular destination right now, and obviously this season, this exposure is really boosting Brockermeyer. That's the tackle.
Yep. No, you're exactly right. The iron is hot, so they're striking right now. I am not ready to say that TCU is going to be the predominant force in the new look Big 12.
I would say 4 schools for me that are going to be competing year in, year out. I mean, there's going to be one-off years where different teams at the top of the Big 12. But in that conversation for premier Big 12 teams, it's TCU and Baylor right there in tier 1, and then tier 2 is Kansas State and Oklahoma State. So that's my opinion. I don't even have Cincinnati in that. If you're going to go off the years and the data, the K-Ford rating that you mentioned, it's fair to have them in the conversation. With the coaching change, Satterfield taking over after what I saw from him at Louisville, I don't know about Cincinnati in the future. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but that's just my opinion. They're a program, to me, losing Fickell. I don't know that they're going to maintain the same consistency that they've had the last 3 to 4 years.
So Cincinnati's absolutely trending down, King. As I'm looking at these things, they finished the year this year power rating, number 41. That's 14 spots lower than they started. 4-year K-Ford rating average, down 5 spots from where they were last year. Recruiting rating average, down 15 spots from where they were last year. So while TCU's got green arrows pointed up on all my charts and graphs and images that I'm putting out, Cincinnati's got the red down arrow. So I agree with you. Interesting to hear you say Oklahoma State in that. I know Oklahoma State's a program that I just referenced on both those things. Oklahoma State fans are not happy, I don't think, based on what I've seen on social media with Mike Gundy and just the direction of that program, which to me is, again, I'm not an Oklahoma State fan. I'm not going to tell them how to feel about their team. But Mike Gundy's been incredible for Oklahoma State. He's taken them to incredible heights they haven't seen before. And, you know, on the doorstep of a national championship game back in 2011, a couple other really great seasons. Got to beat Oklahoma more consistently than they have. I totally get that. But it's interesting to me to hear how down some Oklahoma State fans are on Mike Gundy when it's like, man, I feel like he's done pretty well for your program.
And internally, I think they are going through some despair right now. They have lost a lot to the transfer portal, but from a non-biased outside perspective, that Oklahoma State brand nationally is done pretty well. And I saw some things today, some charts on Twitter today, again, that if you look at kind of average recruiting ranking from the Big 12, Oklahoma State is a team that's actually really over-exceeded based on the recruiting with the amount of wins that they've had. So Gundy's a real good coach. Maybe he's a little bit of a wild card sometimes. Maybe says some things that are some off-putting to some people. But still, from my perspective, Oklahoma State's still right there in that conversation as a premier Big 12 team, specifically in the new conference.
King, let's talk real briefly about the other 2 CFP participants that we had this year. Start with Michigan. They were the number 2 seed. They beat Ohio State head-to-head this year in Columbus. What do you make of the future of Michigan? I know we talked a little bit on the podcast last week, the future of Harbaugh. I think that obviously is a huge – the answer is contingent on Harbaugh, right? Like, if he's there, this. If he's not there, this. What do you think about Michigan?
I mean, I think Michigan's still in a pretty good position, man. I mean, they've returning a bunch of key starters on offense, specifically on that offensive line. They're bringing back their quarterback from last year. Defense, again, was younger this year. This was the year that a lot of people thought the defense was going to maybe take a step back. I think that they're a perennial 10-win team, specifically as long as Harbaugh is there. He knows how to coach. I think the game that Michigan plays fits very well for the Big Ten. Play defense, try and run the ball, grind you down. Those are the teams that, for the most part, have been successful in the Big Ten over the years. So they're another team. Just all four of them, man. I don't really see any of these taking a downward turn. Now I know there's some potential recruiting violations going on. They're trying to go after Jim Harbaugh now for buying a cheeseburger for some recruits during the COVID era. I think he may have lied about it, which has upset some NCAA officials, and maybe there's some little bit of a harsh punishment. But I don't see any reason to believe that Michigan's going to take a step back as well. Now, do I think Michigan is an elite football team? No. But I still think they're going to be very good next year. I still think 10 wins is very realistic. They could very well be 11-0, 10-1 heading into that Ohio State game like they have been the last couple of years.
Yeah, Michigan King, as much as it pains me to say it, they have, like, if I talked earlier about Georgia being accomplished and merit-based, the class of college football, in that similar vein, Michigan is the class of the Big Ten. They've won the Big Ten championship 2 years in a row. They've gone to the college football playoff 2 years in a row. They've beaten Ohio State 2 years in a row. All these things that they haven't done in a long time, they've now done, and they're on these current streaks. In addition to that, they're bringing back their quarterback in J.J. McCarthy. Blake Corum announced this week he's coming back for his senior year. I know we talk about the value of running backs and does it really matter and all that. That's a huge topic in analytics circles. Like, yes, Blake Corum matters, and I think he had a real case to be in the Heisman Trophy ceremony in New York if he didn't get injured in the Ohio State game. I think Blake Corum is really good. I think he's really important, and I think this Michigan team will be back next year. Now, I'm not saying the playoff back. I mean, they'll be back right there fighting to make another appearance in Indianapolis in the Big Ten championship game. Ohio State has to be gunning for them next year. It's like, guys, we've lost them twice in a row now. What are we doing? Come on, let's figure it out. But Michigan, King, for looking at these numbers again, they started the year number 5 in my power ratings. They end the year number 5 in my power ratings. So a very, very good 2022 season. The weighted 4-year ratings, Michigan is up 10 spots from where they were last year. They are now number 7. So they are top 7 team in terms of the last 4 years of, again, weighted K-Ford ratings. Recruiting, they're actually down a little bit, King, from last year. They're down 4 spots to number 14. That's not overly concerning. And again, the recruiting rating piece is I don't want to say it's the smallest. It's not insignificant by any means, but it is also not the most important factor that goes into my preseason ratings. So you have to take those recruiting ratings with a grain of salt. I also have to question myself and continue to wonder about how much weight should I assign to those, knowing that so much now of a recruiting class, quote-unquote, comes from the transfer portal, and I capture transfer portal ins and outs in returning production, so that doesn't get captured into the recruiting rankings. So when people hear me talk about recruiting ratings, well, what about transfer portal? That's returning production, which, again, is already the most heavily weighted input. So they're top 14 there. They're top 7 in the averages. They were number 5 this past year. They're bringing back the quarterback. They're bringing back their running back. They're bringing back a lot of pieces, and I think it's really important that they bring back Jim Harbaugh. I know we talked about it last week, King. Really good points made by you, by Parker, by Josh, that you all think he's coming back. I last week said I think he might be going. Listening to you guys, listening to other reports, maybe he is just leveraging. Maybe he is just trying to get more money at Michigan or get a better deal or get a new facility, whatever it is. I don't know. The recruiting violations are not nothing, but I also am not thinking that's a ton right there, at least for now. I hope he's not back because I like Ohio State. I don't like Michigan. I think he's a really good coach, and I don't like him there because he's beaten Ohio State. But we'll see. If Jim Harbaugh is back, expect Michigan to be preseason top 10, definitely in the polls and in my power ratings, if not top 5, and they will be contending again. I projected 10 wins for them this year. They got 12. And they won the Big Ten championship and then obviously lost to TCU in the semifinals. So they overachieved my expectations, which I would say were pretty lofty this year, and I expect I'll have those expectations again next year for that team. King, Ohio State, the final team, I'll take them first since I like them. I know you don't. We talked about Ohio State, and I talked about Michigan as Georgia in terms of accomplishments within the conference these past 2 years, not in terms of overall accomplishment, but within the conference. Then Ohio State is Alabama in terms of the power ratings, if you're making that analogy between those two conferences. My numbers will have Ohio State more highly power rated than they will Michigan to start the year in 2023. It's a fact. They come in number 2 in the weighted 4-year. They come in number 3 in the weighted recruiting ratings. They finished this year number 3 ahead of Michigan, even though Michigan beat them. Ohio State is a program that has lost some of the biggest games they've played the last 2 years, but it is a program that is still primed to have massive amounts of success moving forward. I fully expect Ohio State to be the favorite in the Big Ten next year. I mean, we talked about the college football playoff odds earlier. They're the number three odds on favorite to win the national championship behind only Georgia and Alabama. Interesting, USC is there at number four. They are going to be back. No C.J. Stroud, of course. The offense, you know, it's a revolving door of receivers. No Jaxon Smith-Njigba, even though he didn't play a huge part in 2022 anyway. Marvin Harrison Jr. will be back. There were some rumors about him transferring to USC. I think he squashed those. I'm not sure where those came from. But the receiving core is always going to be great as long as Hartline is the wide receiver coach. I'm starting to think we need to elevate Brian Hartline if we want to keep him around. Like, we got to give him a bigger title. You got to give him a bigger salary because he just continues to kill it in recruiting. Travion Henderson is going to be back at running back. So Ohio State is going to be just fine. The defense needs to continue to improve. I expect they will in year two under Jim Knowles. Year one was a great improvement over what was a not good defense in 2021. They need to take another jump here in 2022, and they need to beat Michigan. Ohio State has to beat Michigan in 2023, King. I don't know. I've talked about this before. I don't know how Michigan fans did it from 2001 to 2020. When Michigan won two times. They won in 2003, they won in 2011, and they didn't play the game in 2020 because of COVID. Probably a good thing for Michigan. Ohio State was a very good team that year. Michigan really struggled in the COVID year there. So who knows how the game would have gone, but I expect Ohio State would have won that game if they played. The fact of the matter is they didn't. Michigan won two times in a nearly 20-year stretch. King, Ohio State has now lost two in a row, and I'm pulling my hair out. It hurts my heart. I'm depressed about it. I'm angry. I'm upset. I don't know how to process this. I have no idea how Michigan fans won two times in 20 years and didn't lose their absolute mind. Maybe they did. I don't credit to them for making it through it. If Ohio State loses a third time next year to Michigan, look out, King, because I will be in a bad place. But what do you think about Ohio State next year, King? They're the favorite in the Big Ten for you?
Yeah, definitely. I think replacing Stroud, I think Ohio State's going to be fine in the quarterback room. The big one for me is I know Ohio State's losing both their tackles. I think it's DeJuan Jones, and I think today Paris Johnson just declared as well for the draft.
He'll be a first-round pick, so he had to go.
Yeah, he'll be a first-round. Yeah, so I think getting that offensive line secured up a little bit, I think running the ball is going to be – Ohio State's need to have a little bit more versatility in the run game next year to make it a little bit more even. The wide receiver room's nothing to worry about. And, again, I'm with you. Year 200, Jim Knowles. I think they're going to be just fine. Ohio State's going to be right there again. You know, talking about Ryan Day, there's Ohio State fans out there who I think are already saying, you know, it might be worth taking a look at someone else. I don't know if I'm in that boat yet, but 11-1 minimum Big Ten championship in a college football playoff appearance again next year is the expectation of Ohio State, and I wouldn't be surprised if they fell short of that if they did make a move. And it's pretty ridiculous to think about a guy with who's you know, had success and won as many games as he had as Ryan Day, but it doesn't matter if you don't beat Michigan. And the expectation is at the very minimum college football playoff every year for the Ohio State Buckeyes. So it's the same with them year in and year out. I would definitely take them as the favorite again next year over Michigan, even though, you know, Michigan's found a way to win these last two games, but it's going to be status quo in the Big Ten again next year. I hate it, but it's going to be Ohio State, it's going to be Michigan, and it's going to be Penn State once again there at three. So, you know, it's what we get used to, but all four of those teams, they're in a fine spot. They really are.
It is going to be interesting. I like to pride myself on being objective and being rational and thinking things through. There's something about losing to Michigan, King. If he loses three in a row to Michigan, I'm going to wonder. Even if Ohio State goes 11-1 and makes country playoff like they did again this year, beating Michigan's the expectation. I don't know how else to say it at Ohio State. So, King, those are the four playoff teams that we had this year. We will talk much more about which teams we expect to make the college football playoff as we get closer to the 2023 season. One final look back, King, on the 2022 year. Just final thoughts on the season that was. Just, you know, whatever you want to get off your chest or whatever you want to talk about here. Do we have a final tally on the bets? Have we final tallied that yet or no?
We don't have final tally. I do owe the listeners the transparency on that. I know we went positive in bowl season.
There we go.
I gotta look up still where we were at with everything on that for the year. But no, hell of a season, man. Congrats to the Georgia Bulldogs. Far and away the best team in college football this year. Just a great, great 4 months, man. It's the best time of the year. There's nothing better when that crisp air comes around. The weather starts to turn in the summer to the fall. It's amazing how fast it goes by every year. We talk about it, but you know, another great time doing the pod with you this year. Look forward to continuing to expand it. And some high moments for us, for me as a Purdue fan this year that I got to witness, some low moments as well. But it was a lot of fun. Purdue making the Big Ten championship game for the first time was an incredible experience. It didn't go how we wanted it to go, but a lot to take away. Watched so many good games this year. The gambling didn't quite go the way I wanted to, but hey, man, you're going to have some losing seasons here and there. It's just part of the way of life. It doesn't deter me. I'm still all aboard, still love it just as much as I did yesterday. And, you know, I just look forward to 280-something days, whatever you said, Kelly, 220-something days now. We just got to begin to the countdown. But we got a lot between now and then. There's college football year-round. We got a lot of good content still.
We have a lot between now and then, as you said. It was a great season. It was really fun doing the second year of the podcast. We are committed, King. We're saying it for accountability here. We are committed to providing more content throughout the summer months. And we do have a few guests already that we've lined up for the summer. So we will continue to keep the content coming. Not sure every week is going to – not sure we'll have an episode every week. Not sure every week or every episode will be a full hour. But we will keep it coming, King. My final thoughts, though, on the 2022 season, and I'm sure these will be referenced again throughout the summer as we move forward and project into 2023, but just have to give a shout-out one final time to the 2022 overachievers. TCU, Duke, Illinois, Kansas, Washington, USC, Oregon State, Vanderbilt, just some of the Power 5 teams that won at least 2.5 more games than I expected in the regular season. I think the trajectories of those programs is trending in the right direction. If you're a fan of those programs, you have to be excited about the year you had and optimistic about the future. And then, King, on the flip side, I'm sure we'll talk a lot about these programs. The 2022 underachievers, again, Power 5 only, that lost, you know, 2.5 or more games, or that won 2.5 or more or fewer games than we expected coming in. Miami Hurricanes lead that list. I am very curious to see what Mario Cristobal is able to do in year two. They're on a tear on the recruiting trail, but this year was a massive disappointment. Not the end of the world. It's year one for a head coach, even though Sonny Dykes has just proved what you can do in year one at a program. But I think Miami's going to be fine. I think Mario Cristobal is going to be fine. I think it's going to work out there, but he definitely needs to have a good bounce back in 2023. Nebraska, a team that's been up there for a while in the underachievers list. Northwestern, so I'm just hammering the Big Ten West right now. Texas A&M, is Jimbo Fisher going to get it figured out? Of course, they hire the new OC there in Petrino. We'll see how that plays out. We'll see how they work together. Oklahoma, in year one, under Brent Venables, really struggled this year. Again, I'm not sounding the alarm. I'm not freaking out. But it's just, hey, expectations are high at these programs, and you've fallen significantly short. We need to see you turn it around and make some improvements and strides in 2023. Iowa State, a disappointing year by my numbers. Michigan State, Wisconsin, and Virginia, also all, Kinger, won at least 2.5 or more or fewer games than I expected. So those are just some of the overachievers and underachievers. Really enjoyed it, King. We will be back with more content, as you said, throughout the summer. But until next time, we appreciate you guys listening. We hope you've enjoyed the ride. Kinger, we're going to have Trent Sorensen. We're going to have episodes between now and then, but got to shout out Trent. He did win our 2022 Bowl Mania Pick'em competition. So he will be joining us as our 2023 Week 1 guest on the podcast in August. Again, we're going to have other guests between now and then, talking about a variety of different topics during the summer months. But Trent has earned the right to be the Week 1 guest in the regular season, so we're very much looking forward to Trent being on. I believe in the DMs he sent us, he said this is going to be his first podcast appearance. So assuming he doesn't – I love it. Assuming he doesn't get on a podcast between now and then, you know I feel this way, King. I love providing people their first opportunity to be on a podcast because I will always remember Kyle Umlang and Blinken Riley bringing me on Statistically Speaking for the first time, and then, of course, our friend Philip Slavin from the 1012 Network bringing me on the 1012 Network podcast shortly after that. Without those two experiences, King, I don't think I would have had the motivation to reach back out to you and be like, hey, man, we're making our podcast happen, the We Hate Your Team podcast. So it's always fun to give people their first chance because you never know what they might be inspired to do from that point on. So don't think we can end it on any higher of a note than that. Thank you all for listening. We really appreciate it. We hope you enjoyed the 2022 college football season as much as we did. Thanks for following along all 23 episodes. We'll be back with more, but the countdown is on. 228 days. It'll be 226 when this episode drops. Days until the 2023 FBS college football season returns. Until then, thank you so much, and we will talk to you again soon.